You are listening to Know You're Crazy. My name is Susan Dene. We all have crazy. What separates us is how we choose to deal with it. I'm going to be delivering engaging and actionable tools to own your crazy, treat your crazy, and turn it into your own superpower. I hope that you walk away from this show feeling the power and strength within you. And never forget to enjoy your journey because you are worth it. Everyone, Susan Dene here. Welcome to the Know You're Crazy talk show where we are, or you are listening to Emotional Recovery in the Raw. And today I am super excited because my guest, Ed Wood, is joining me today. And Ed is the author of Be a Giant Killer, which really, Ed, there are so many transformative chapters within this book that I am so looking forward to our conversation today. I was explaining to Ed right before we logged on, my laptop crashed. It's like one of those all of a sudden dilemmas that you're not quite expecting. And we learn to roll with things in life like this, don't we? So my awesome introduction, which I know that Ed is a motivational speaker. He teaches and workshops and has spoke for hundreds and thousands of audiences. And he is with us today to share his experience, strength, and hope in transformation. This is the part of his book. And I'm just going to jump right in, Ed. I met you at a healthcare conference where I was one in the audience. I got to listen to a transformative presentation. And one of the things about me, Ed, I don't know if you know this or not, but I've spent nearly, 21 years clean and sober. And along that journey, along that journey, there's been many transformations that I've had to walk through. And it's been a joy to walk through those, although at the time it didn't always feel like that.
Yeah, true.
Right? And then during that transformation, as we dive into this book and some of the things that you're going to be bringing to the show today, there were many opportunities to help others and many opportunities for transformation for myself. And when you're in, when you're involved with helping others in an altruistic way, and you've done the work yourself, I don't know if you'll agree with me, but I can spot somebody who's done the work.
Yes. Yes.
When I listened to you that day at the conference, and I heard the authentic sharing of not only pain, but transformation as a result of that, you know, I pick up on when people are sharing the in-between, the insight that they bring. And you had that. I could not wait until after that. I think it was later on, like after you got done speaking and everybody was coming up and talking to you, I couldn't wait to get in there to say, I want to have you on the show because that is a person who has done some work. So please, please, if you can just tell us a little bit about you, we're just going to jump in and a little bit about your story and kind of your journey and what brought you to the book and all that good stuff.
I love what you shared earlier, Susan. And first off, just thank you and your team and Colton for allowing me really an opportunity to share on your platform with your listeners. And I love what you said earlier in terms of, you know, people that do the work, because I am a work in progress, not a finished product, and not where I want to be, but not where I used to be. And I've learned that everything requires work. Your dream and your marriage, your parenting if you have children. Therapy requires work. Yeah. And people truly heal from our scars and our mistakes when we do. And so that element of work, knowing you're crazy, and then working on your crazy is really, really important. So thank you for having me.
It is. And I think the thing that really stood out when I was going through your book was the honesty with which you share your personal experience. You know, it takes a lot. And especially when certain things that folks, I think, sometimes hold back on for fear of being judged or fear of being authentic, because there's a vulnerability that's involved when that authenticity is put on the table.
Sure.
And one area of this that I was truly impressed, and it's one of the things that you shared about at the conference, well, there was two. You had the tragedy of your personal family. Was it the Jamestown massacre? Am Jonestown. I saying that correctly? Jonestown. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And then there was also your personal experience, just in parenting, parenting. I don't hear a lot of speakers really go into the depth with the transformation that happens as parents when we personally transform.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. And it's, you know, I've learned that people will shame you for your story. One of the reasons why I wrote the book was to deal with the giant of shame. You know, I lost 27 relatives in Jonestown, Guyana, behind Jim Jones in 1978, including seven close cousins and a grandma who I remember holding on to her before she went to Jonestown. Never saw her again, obviously. For years, I told my story in news interviews and at annual memorial services, but I never shared it in the speaking circuit in healthcare or in leadership circles because of the shame and embarrassment. I was silenced by it. And many people didn't really know about the depths of my story, not just from Jonestown, but in me and my journey as a better father and a better husband and a better leader until they read the book, Be a Giant Killer. And I've learned over the course of time that we don't have to be paralyzed by shame, the shame of our story. We don't have to drink at the same well as our predecessors. We can break cycles. We can be truth tellers, giant killers. We can crush habits that have been passed down and passed down and passed down from previous generations. We can tell the stories that have shamed us, that have shamed our family, that have scarred us, so that we can ensure the next generation is different.
It is just a wonderful thing. And the possibility for changing the generations, for impacting our own children, is before all of us.
Yes.
What was coming to mind for me when you were sharing, what was popping in my mind was courage. The amount of courage it takes. There's so much courage in between everything you just shared. There's the courage in going within, facing the darkness, facing the vulnerability, facing shame, understanding what shame is for you, how shame even shows up, but that takes courage to look within. The courage to, and you mentioned this in your book, a couple situations with your children where, you know, you were just, you said it. I'm going to read it from the book because I just love the line. It was just so fantastic. I was a great encourager, but not always a great comforter.
Yeah.
Oh, that's just a powerful, powerful line when it comes to parenting. Mm-hmm. And that takes courage to be vulnerable with your children and to admit fault.
Well, and you know, a big reason why I wrote Be a Giant Killer was I realized that there were things in my childhood that I carried into my adulthood. And there's some things that I needed to hear from parents that I had not heard. And as I begin to look back at my life, I begin to excavate things that potentially my children had carried from childhood into adulthood. And I just begin to talk about them because when you're vulnerable, you can't be ugly.
Yeah.
And,
so true.
And being vulnerable is a great strength. And so, I was a great encourager. I recall my daughter, she was racing in a race. I may have told the story in Oregon, and she was 17 and she was, you know, photo finish. And suddenly the other girl starts going up a little bit on her. And as she advances past my daughter starts limping. And she eventually limps across the finish line. But while she's limping and losing ground like an idiot, I'm on the sidelines. Push, push. You're fine. You're fine. The finish line is almost there. Whatever I was saying to encourage her. And we walked away from that race that day. She was limping behind me and I was ahead of her saying things like, you were fine. Something to the effect of maybe she faked the injury. You could have pushed forward. And, you know, while she may never remember the name of the person who crossed the finish line ahead of her that day, she'll never forget the way I made her feel. And so I was a great encourager, but in terms of being a comforter, you know, I was the type of father who, if they were sick, I was praying for them and telling them they would be fine. Those are all great things, but rarely did I sit on the side of their bed and say, hey, I know you're not feeling well, and I know you've really prepared for a big test or you have a big game tomorrow. That must be really, really hard for you. How are you doing through that? Rarely did I comfort. And I believe that when we comfort, we have the ability to make our children, our people, we have the ability to feel what they're feeling and relate to them in known hurts. We can empathize what they're going through, what they're feeling, what they're sensing. And so as a parent, I've recognized the importance of being able to go back and say, hey, when you were 14 and dad did X, Y, and Z, that was my pride. I was angry. I was wrong for doing that. I embarrassed you. Will you ever forgive me?
I just, that whole, you are just speaking to my heart. I love it. I love it when a parent truly embraces not the, here's what I loved about what you just shared, Ed. It wasn't the, in the beginning, in that moment after she loses the race by just a hair, it may not have been an obvious, outlandish mistake as a parent. Like, you know, if you want to get on a spectrum of comparison, if you want to say, here's this, you know, severe child abuse, and then there's a situation after the race. But what I just love about what you shared is you understand that in that moment, how that makes our children feel when we are caught up in our own expectations and our own wants and our own inabilities to witness our children suffering or to witness what we think our children should be doing. And you spotted it and you understand it. And that is just such a quality. I love that story. And I love the fact that you understood it upon reflection, how you made her feel. But it was so, just the detail of that. I'm walking in front of her. I'm saying these things. Yes, I mean, it's just so, if more, and maybe a lot of parents, you know, really recognize that, and it's not talked about enough, right? Maybe it's not talked about enough. I don't know. But I think that really, when you get into empathizing with your children, so powerful.
I should have, Susan, carried her when she couldn't carry herself.
That's what I mean.
And I failed. You know, we have and here's the thing, you know, we have a tendency to carry shame for what others have done to us, or we have a tendency to give people what others have given to us. Experts say that 80 to 90% of how we observe things in life occurs by the age of 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Just so for a moment, she's 17.
Yeah.
There was a part of my behavior that day that she had become accustomed to because she had been observing it since 5 or 6. And often we don't realize that our history shapes everything. It shapes our relationships, how we respond to people, to places, to reactions and things, the histories, the hurts and the insecurities, the things that we've seen in people, our caregivers that were unhealthy, can produce lifelong triggers. Sometimes when reacting to people in our present, we're really speaking to individuals in our past, someone who didn't listen to or validate us. When there's unresolved trauma or hurt, it's intrinsic in human nature to preemptively react to people before history repeats itself. And so I've had to go back and really work on this as a parent, because, you know, there are two of my kids. I can ask them, hey, where are you going this weekend? Or where are you going today? But because of their history with me, they hear me say, where do you think you're going?
So powerful. And it's very powerful insight that you have, that you are aware of that. And that in the moment, you are mindful of what their perspective likely is of you. Because I do believe also, and you mentioned this in the book, you know, as they become adults and how we can, you know, change the parent that we, you know, we are still parenting, even when they become adults. And I do believe that there are significant changes made as our communication shifts, but you are so spot on about, here's what I love about this, Ed. And I knew this is one of the reasons I wanted you on this show. You 100% own what you're bringing to the table, whether or not that was placed upon you as a child or anywhere, maybe even in your early years, but you have owned who you are as an individual and the experience that has come with that. And you've owned it to the extent of not only being of service in ministry, but in your speaking, but most importantly, under your own roof. Yes. That's what I'm talking about. Under your own roof with your children, within your, that's where it's at, right? I mean, we can have as much knowledge. We can have as much inspiration. We can have as much talent as we want. But if we aren't bringing that home under our roof.
Yes. Yes.
Then who are we, doing?
And really, whether or not they respond the way you want them to respond.
That's right.
Because how our children arrived at where they're at wasn't overnight. And so if you're trying to unravel some of those things, it could take some time for them to trust the new transformed you that you're trying to be. But for me, it's really all about continuing to write the next chapter.
Yeah.
To refusing to allow bad family history or our dysfunction write the last chapter or narrative in the lives of the people that we love. Because people, as I mentioned earlier, heal from our scars when we do. We change the next generation of our life by changing our character and refusing to look the same. I want to be, Susan, unrecognizable to my parents. You know, I just sent my one of my sons a text, and, you know, if they're all looking at this message today, I'm sending you as well. It's coming. But I sent one of my sons a message that said, hey, talk to me. What can I do more or less of to be a better father to you in 2023?
Oh, that's beautiful.
Because some of our kids are carrying hurts and shame through our actions. And we did our best as parents. We didn't have a manual, right, in raising them. But it's not good enough to say, well, I just did the best that I could. I believe that we have a responsibility to rewire our hearts and change the triggers that exist in our children's life, our people that we love around us. And that happens, I believe, by creating a mound of change behavior that they can eventually trust in the most difficult times of their life.
Yeah, there are layers to our beliefs and where they are grounded in, and getting to the root of beliefs is really the transformation, the core transformation. But then in that process, right, there's like we chip away. So what's coming to mind for me to ask you is how far back does it go for you when in your ability or your desire maybe to seek a better way of living, to seek a better way of feeling, of living, of doing? Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, when we were younger, they had and we're probably telling our age, they had a song that said, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. That was a lie.
Yes, it was.
Because words hurt. Words hurt. That's why what a parent or family member said to you when you were young, even as an adult, still sticks with you today, still stings, still cripples, still triggers you, because our heart knows no time. I was at a therapist some years ago in year five or maybe year 10 of my marriage, and we were struggling in communication significantly, and some areas where I just deeply failed my wife and my family. And I remember the therapist talking about this rewiring process, and he said, our hearts are like black boxes. When you think of a black box, Susan, you think of this indestructible piece of metal underneath a pilot seat. And it's a recorder that records everything. It records the good. Welcome to United. We'll have a 6-hour flight to Washington, D.C., food in the cabin, television, free television and movies as well. Stick your feet up. Enjoy the flight. It remembers the bad. Mayday. Mayday. Prepare for crash landing, fire in the cockpit. And Susan, that's our heart. It has the ability to withstand catastrophic events. And it remembers everything. Mm-hmm. Every betrayal, every abandonment, every rejection, every hurt that we've experienced. It remembers every celebration, every achievement. And so we have a responsibility to rewire our hearts so we can write the next chapter in our lives. I believe that God uses the human agency of our words written in the chapters of our life to impact society, people, places, industries, and workplaces. He pens a masterpiece out of our messes, a story out of our shame, so the next generation doesn't remain the same.
One of the obvious things to me, which I like I said, I love your honesty. I love your authenticity around this subject about personal growth and the different areas of your life and what you've had to do around those areas in order to get there. Can you remember or recall, maybe, I'm sure you do, a couple or some of the biggest hurdles you had to overcome, like some of the real, maybe a belief you had or something that had to shift for you in order to really open up some gateways to more loving relationships with your spouse or your children or friends or anyone, right? I mean, because beliefs are across, you know, the spectrum as far as relationships are concerned. Do you have like one or two beliefs that you remember you really had to shift in order to just walk more with love, really?
Well, you know, as men, we feel we're bulletproof. It's intrinsic in our nature to feel like we're invincible, like nothing can affect us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I grew up watching a mom who was very independent. She was single. She raised me by herself. And my dad wasn't around. And so the mindset that I gained from watching her was, you know, if you want to get something done, do it yourself. Yeah. And it wasn't the greatest mindset for a marriage.
Probably not.
at all whatsoever. And I remember my wife one time saying to me, you know, sometimes I feel like you act like you don't need me. Why is that? And I had to just share with her, you know, I grew up watching a mom that had to do everything.
Yeah.
She didn't have any help. And, you know, for me watching her, my mindset as I became an adult, remember we observe things by the age of 5 or 6. By the time I was an adult, my mindset was I didn't need anyone. And I had to really allow myself to be vulnerable and to admit some things that I was lacking in my life that I needed my wife to be able to balance and feel with me. I went through times in my life where I had to address some anger that I had towards people that were not in my life at this time. I talked to my father one time and I had a conversation and said, hey, Dad, you know, why didn't you and mom work? It would have been great to have you in my life at these areas of my childhood. And, you know, he responded and said, I'm not even sure if I'm your father.
Mm.
And it hurt me so deeply, but it was around that time where I realized that I wasn't responsible to heal someone else's trauma or bad family history, but I had a responsibility to heal mine, because yep. we transmit the traumas and the fears that we don't heal to the next generation.
So true. So true and so powerful, Ed. Thank you for that. Well, we are going to take a brief break here, folks. If you are just now joining us, then the first segment of the show, you'll be able to rewatch it because we have had some powerful discussion on relationships, transformation. Ed Norwood, the author of Be a Giant Killer, is joining me today. We are going to take a short break. And when we come back, Ed, I want to talk to you a little bit about being in the wilderness and enduring the wilderness. That's a powerful chapter in your book. And I would love to talk about that when we return. So we will be back shortly, folks.
Are you ready to branch out, to take a leap of faith, to love yourself and others fully? Join Erica Gifford Mills in her signature series, The Rooted Life. This virtual 12-week series will equip, empower, and enlighten you. This is a coaching series that allows both group and individual work. 12 weekly, 1-hour sessions in the comfort of your own home. Schedule your free Empower Hour now at GetRootedRadio.com. That is GetRootedRadio.com.
Did you know that when we talk about the Earth's ecosystems, the most important ecosystem has been left out? You. We created the ecosystem approach to recapture human potential.
Find us at theecosystemapproach.org.
Join us every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time for the Ecosystem Approach Show with Jason and Patricia on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Boy, does this feel like good times today. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. I love it. This is a show that's going to invite all of you to open up your heart because it's about dreams coming true. There's a road we get to take as we craft out and we lay a course that's in service of so many others. Sometimes the universe, God, whatever you believe in, have you ever wondered why, but better than why, or how the universe knows how to line things up in a way that gets you ready for the most expansive part of who you're going to become? This is the time to change. And gratitude, leading with love, opens up more expansive possibilities than you can imagine. Crust busting your way to an awesome life.
I want to thank you all for tuning us in, turning us on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Everyone, this is Susan Denae, and welcome back to the Know You're Crazy show, where you are listening to emotional recovery in the raw. Today, you are joining me with my guest, Ed Norwood, author of Be a Giant Killer. I keep wanting to say to be a giant, but Be a Giant Killer. And if you are just now joining us, the first half of the show, we have been talking about vulnerability, transformation, and transformation under the roof with our families, with our spouses, with our children. What that requires, the humility involved in that. It's just been one powerful half hour of a show, and I'm really looking forward to the next half. One of the questions I had asked Ed in the first segment was, what were some of the major beliefs that had to be shifted in order to show up differently in the relationships? And where I'm going to take that a little bit further is when we are in the middle of change, and you have a chapter dedicated to the wilderness. Mm. When we are in a season of change, for me personally, that change in some of those seasons has gone on a while. Mm. There was a few of them recently. Well, I say recently within the last 4 or 5 years, but one of them, I was reading a book by Michael Beckwith, And I think he calls it, God, I want to say the dark shadow, but he talks about a phase where he really went through a challenging time where he was just, it's as if we're waiting on God, we're waiting on the promises to come through, but there's a waiting period. And in your book, you write it as we want the promise, but not the process. And I'm paraphrasing that. Those weren't your exact words, but it's a very powerful line that you have in the book. And because really, when it comes to transformation, for me, it was about not quitting before the miracle, not quitting before the miracle. And when, because time takes time. I mean, time takes time. I was reminded of this recently. I was sharing about something in the rooms of recovery. I'm a recovered alcoholic and drug addict, 21 years clean and sober. And in the beginning of that transformation, when you're somebody newly getting sober, you want it all right now. Like, you know, you want to put the family back right now. You want to make all the amends right now. You know, you're just, can I just hold the job long enough to get the bills paid? Can I get the bill collectors off my back? You know, what can I do to get, you know, not enough fast enough? And that same sense of urgency can absolutely put us in a trajectory of going backwards if we act on it, if we react on it. You were talking about reaction in the first segment, you know, when we react on something. And if I react too soon and I don't give time for the miracle, all that transformation work sometimes just kind of goes out the window. So I want to hear from you, Ed, on your perspective on the wilderness and just kind of going through that process for you.
I mean, it's the wilderness. It's a place of temporary confusion where nothing in your life is working, where you're planting seed in the ground and nothing's growing. And you're trying to, as you mentioned, remove yourself from that difficult season of isolation. And really what God is trying to do is get you to just be in a place where you can only hear His voice and His voice alone. I went through, you know, when I was married at 27, after getting married, 2 weeks later, my father-in-law had a massive heart attack. He died. My grandmother died of congestive heart failure, who was really close with me. And I lost my business, my first business that we had, that I had coming into the marriage. And I tried everything to keep that business on life support because it was the vehicle I used to ensure to my wife's family I could take care of her. It got really, really bad. It got so bad that on our honeymoon, I had to ask her father to send us money. And in the season of loss, I learned a lot. I learned that in that season, you won't live by just money alone or bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Your relationship in that season is crucial because we were created for human community and fellowship. We were created to be able to bounce things off our spouse and people, to work together, to collaborate, to be vulnerable, to compromise, to change, to break silos, to be naked and transparent and vulnerable with people through the stories that we tell. But when you're going through the wilderness, an element of shame comes. And as a coping mechanism, you're trying to remove the shame from your life by quickly pulling things back together. You know, a person will often in the wilderness, you know, say things like, I wish I had never been born. Why? Anger towards people, anger towards life, anger towards feeling inadequate or unsupported or passed over suddenly turns inward. And so I have a great little question that I tell people to ask themselves. I ask my children this. I ask myself this question. And people that I train and mentor, I'll ask them to do a heart check from time to time. And a heart check, Susan, is really simple. It's two questions. What are you afraid of? Number one. Number two, who are you angry at? What are you afraid of? And who are you angry at? Because admitting what you're angry about can be scary. Anger is normally a secondary emotion to being afraid of something. The physiology of anger is fear, but admitting your anger, communicating what's happening on the inside of you, instead of withdrawing, kills isolation, and it really empowers transformation to face giants of disappointment instead of trying to numb and silence them with alcohol and drugs and sex and different things. And I've learned this. We may not be able to change our circumstance and people by sharing what's on our heart, but by speaking up, we allow, Susan, our voice to be heard. And when we give an audience to the little boy or little girl in us, they mature and heal faster. Tantrums decrease and healing increases. No longer silent, no longer violent. Nothing lost, nothing stolen. We can recover all that is taken when we begin to speak up environments where we've been silenced.
So powerful. The necessity, what was going through my mind, 100% feeling everything you just said, the necessity of safety and within expression. The necessity of expression.
Yes.
Some of us come from a background where we have to learn not to overly express in a belligerent, rude way, where it's almost, we got to tone it down a little bit so that we can speak in a way in which people want to hear us.
Yes.
Right? And then others of us have internalized so much that we're scared to break through that I've worked with many women who cannot even find a voice. They don't know how to articulate the emotions. It comes down sometimes to literally teaching a script to get them started in what you're conveying here of expression.
I love what you said. I love that, Susan. I love that.
Yeah. It's an expression. And then the expression is so necessary because, oh my goodness, we have so much to give the world. We are divine beings, in my opinion. And I always believe that. And I think that if we can get connected to that inner source and get connected to that inner voice, and we have the courage and the understanding to express that without shame, but with boldness, with spiritual boldness is how I would like to say that. It's just such an empowering thing because you are 100% spot on. The community and the fellowship and the people who we surround ourselves with, that is our lifeline. That is our lifeline. And if I'm waking up in the day and all I'm thinking about is me, 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 and I don't have anybody to share any of my joy with, what is this all about? You know, and that's why I was expressing earlier how cool it was to hear that the transformation that you've experienced, bringing that home underneath the roof to who you live with. You know, I can go, and my husband says this really well. He says, you know, I'm the same person that I am at home, that I am at work, that I am with my friends. There is no switching of the masks. There is no, I need to present a certain person here. I have finally come into full acceptance of who I am. And when we get into that place, what you were touching on earlier, we have learned to let go of shame.
Yes.
And if shame comes in, we have trained ourselves. We know what that feels like. You know what shame feels like? I know what shame feels like. And as soon as that happens, like, oh, there's a little maladjustment going on there. We need to go back and check and see where's that coming from. And I love the idea that you are so mindful about checking in with, was this something or a belief or something that was handed down to me?
Yes.
Or some perception that I adopted when I was a young one?
Yes.
That now as a grown adult, that I'm still reacting emotionally to something that was given to me years ago. And not that the adult in my life even years ago intended that. Because I do believe, like, in even in my own family history, they were doing the best that they possibly could with the tools that they had. I remember my father, who transitioned in December of 20 from COVID. I remember one of my best friends. Yeah, and he was at my house years ago. I don't even know, maybe 2015 or so. And he was sitting on my deck, and we were sitting outside. You know, here we up in the Northwest, and I've got these huge trees in the backyard. And he was looking all peaceful, and the sun was shining on his face. And I just looked at him. I said, "What are you thinking?" And he goes, "You know, if I just did a little bit better, so that you can do a little bit better."
Wow.
He goes, "I feel good about that." And wow. I can just see the joy as a parent, and I can still see wow. him saying that to me. And that really is what it's about. And that man transformed.
Wow.
That man came from very hard upbringing, right? And so, wow. yeah, I really appreciate your message, Ed. I really appreciate your message.
So powerful what you shared about your father. If that was the only thing that you had, if that was the only thing he passed down to validate some of what you may have gone through, man, that's so powerful.
Right.
To be able to experience that. You know, oftentimes I was on air with someone recently and they ended the show by stating one of the hardest conversations you can have is with yourself. And I said to them, I may beg to differ, but if that is true, I can say that the second hardest conversation you will ever have is with a parent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because oftentimes our parents, like if you were to ask people, how old does your parent think you are? How old do they see you as? Most people I've asked this question to, they believe that their parents see them as a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this little boy and little girl in us yeah. crying for validation, crying for significance, crying to be seen or to be heard, not just seen.
Yeah.
And often what keeps people from having those heart-to-heart conversations or those hard conversations that could bring transformation, that could kill generational giants, is them saying, well, they're never going to change. What's the use of even saying anything? It's always going to be like this.
Yeah.
But what they don't realize is that as long as they remain silent, that little boy and little girl in them never matures or heals.
Yeah.
And once you begin to speak up, if all you've done is allow your voice to be heard, you grow.
Mm-hmm.
You have the ability to mature into the man or woman you've been called to be. And it just takes having those difficult conversations in love, obviously,
mm-hmm.
with the people that you love or the people that cared for you, and being able to say, hey, you know, when I was a kid, I really needed you at this time in my life. It was really hard without you. Having those conversations and letting your voice be heard, it has a profound effect on your ability to grow as an individual.
The word trust. I was just thinking about the word trust and trusting in the process, trusting in the transformation. I think one of the blessings that I've had, and I believe it was probably God-given, I'm not for sure, could have been also some lessons from my mom and my dad.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I've always been trustworthy of others people. Like I'm able to receive feedback or trust what somebody's feedback is to that. I'm not too critical. You know, I leave open-mindedness comes to mind, because when you were sharing that about the communication and how important it is to be able to once again express and to state how something made you feel to a role, a person who showed up a certain way, especially in a parental role,
sure.
Had a significant impact on you. And you shared this earlier in the show. Not only is there an appropriate delivery with that, when you've done the work, you understand that, but you also understand that what the other person does with that, you can't put too many high expectations on it, because yes. they may not be able to receive it in the same way that you were to deliver it.
Yes.
You know, I learned this years ago in an amends process where I was ready to make the amends, but the other person wasn't ready to receive it. Mm-hmm. And that was my job in order to accept that. And that was part of the humility in making the amends,
yes.
was understanding that if I'm truly to be of service, if I'm truly to be, you know, honoring my side of the road in this experience, mm-hmm. then I also own the idea that it's okay if they can't receive it right now. Or
sure. Absolutely.
You know, some of my bumpy communication that may rear up every now and then is with my elderly mother. You know, every now and then something will come up that I can spot, like, ooh, that one came from my upbringing. Like, oh, mm-hmm. that one's, you know.
Yes.
But understanding that people are only capable of what people are capable of, even when they are your own parents. And so it's always about,
yes.
I love the fact that you are so on top of this piece of it. It is about having a voice. It is about expression. It is about understanding that we are worth expressing how somebody makes us feel. And as adults, and as adults, they may or may not be able to respond in the way that we would desire, but the healing comes from the expressing.
I love that. And the really the question is, do you want to be open or do you want to be closed?
That's right.
If you're going to be open for business, then requires you to have those conversations. Well, watch this. Do you want to be open for the next generation who's watching you, who's been watching since 5 or 6? Or do you want to be closed? In the book of Genesis 2, it says that and Adam and Eve were naked, either Genesis 2 or Genesis 3. It says, and Adam and Eve were naked and they knew no shame. As long as the first family in the Garden of Eden were naked, vulnerable, and transparent, there was no shame. The moment you remove vulnerability or you refuse to be transparent, that's where shame lives. The moment a bad day became a bad decision, when Adam and Eve sinned, they found fig leaves to cover themselves in the garden. And they felt shame not because people could see them. They were the only ones in the garden. They felt shame because their nakedness was a reminder of their disobedience in eating what was forbidden by God. And so they covered their nakedness or the consequence, but they could not cover their shame or their disobedience that lingered. So they hid from God. And from the beginning of time, God has been walking in the garden of your life, looking and searching for you who are hiding, searching for us who had decided through some mistake or through some disobedience, through some failure, who decided we would no longer be vulnerable, we would no longer be transparent, we would hide ourselves with our jobs and with our careers and with our positions. But the creator of the universe has been looking for you to bring expression out of your life, to find you and to help you to understand that there wasn't a thing you big enough you could hide behind that would cause him to not see where you were in your life at this time, in this season, in this moment, in this marriage. And so I believe that having the power to express or to tell our story to people is very, very important. I'll close with this. I went to a marriage seminar by New Life Ministries, and they instructed the husbands to write their life story to their wives.
Mm. Oh, I love this. I read this in your book. Yes.
And they simply said this. You get to determine how transparent you want to be. But tell your wife your story, because your story is her story. Whatever you've been living, she's living. And people relive the stories we don't tell.
Read with that when I read that in your book. So much loved that. I had recently been doing a couple coaching, and one of the very first sessions I had asked, do one another know each other's whole story? Yes. Do you know one another's entire story? When I read that in your book, I thought that is so powerful, because one of the agreements that my husband and I had when we first met, all was out on the table. Was out on the table. I was going to know everything about him, and he was going to know everything about me. And I just, we met in the rooms of recovery. And so when you're coming from that background anyways, you're both kind of already thinking there might be some sketchy stuff that went on in the background.
But
there's, as I get that out on the table now, no secrets going forward. But that was one of the agreements we had. And so we have never lived our marriage with any secrets.
I love that.
Between us, as far as who we brought to the table. And you are spot on that you do become in relation with that entire story.
Yes.
with that entire story. And there are no blinders when you're walking in, when you can get to that level of ultimate intimacy. Mm-hmm. But it's such a powerful thing to not live within shame within your marriage.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Powerful thing to just be open. Because wouldn't you say that so many of us, in fact, we're just hiding. You know, a lot of people are hiding, and you gave the example a few minutes ago, whether it's in our jobs or whether it's, you know, in extracurricular activities, hobbies, whatever, but a lot of people end up hiding and not expressing. And if the people that you're sharing your roof with, if they don't know who they're living with, or if you haven't been able to bring the transformation under that roof, there's still a little bit of hiding going on when you come home. And I always like to say that's, if I'm coming home, I want to be home. You know, that's my safety zone. I want to feel home. Yeah. Yes. And yeah, I just, I am just so grateful to be having this conversation with you today.
Oh, that's so powerful, Susan. You know, we oftentimes we definitely hide. And Rick Warren has a great quote. He says, wearing masks wears you out.
Mm-hmm.
And man, it creates a relentless performance cycle that says you can never rest.
Yeah.
It convinces you, masks convince you to constantly trying to prove yourself to people and shield the areas of your life you don't want to be fully known in. And I just believe that we were called to transmit something different to the next generation. And if I could end with anything, it would be just this. You know, I was talking to my church this past Sunday out of Proverbs 26:2, and King Solomon writes this: an undeserved curse will be powerless to harm you. It may flutter over you like a bird, but it will find no place to land. Some of you watching today and listening, you didn't deserve what happened to you when you were a child, when you were abandoned, betrayed, passed over or silenced, not celebrated by people or dismissed. And oftentimes we give what people have done to us and a generational curse has more credit than they deserve. But I believe we can disarm our past with the present. We can make what people have done before us in their generation powerless to affect us in our generation by present decisions, present transformation, being present in the lives of people when others were absent in ours, not just being an encourager, but being a comforter to them.
Ed, I 100% believe the same as you. I 100% believe the same as you. The power is within the presence. We can make changes. We are able to move forward. We are not held to the past. Mm-hmm. 100% agree with you. Yeah, very, very powerful. Folks, that hour flew by. I told Ed in the beginning, I said, we'll do a little plan here, but ultimately this is probably going to be a conversation that's going to, hour's going to be up before we know it. And that's exactly what happened. Ed, I want to thank you for being on the Know You're Crazy show. You are a example of what transformation is when someone is willing enough and courageous enough and honest enough with themselves, and that the ripple effect that can have in the relationships in their life and the people that you serve in your ministry. So thank you so much for being here today, folks. There it is. You can see the replay on the YouTube channel, and I will be doing snippets and putting those out there on social media and some with Ed too. I'm sure I'm going to give him some so that you can see more of this show. All right, folks, have a great night. Thank you for being here. You have been listening to Know You're Crazy.
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 And my name is Susan Dene. We are identifying, understanding, and treating your crazy one episode at a time. Tune in to TransformationTalkRadio.com. To connect with me or Growth Spurt Your Life, please visit SusanDene.com. That's Susan Dene, D-E-N-E-E.com.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.